big when you make me top that. I don't know the lyrics, but it's my
I don't
favorite
really
song.
Give a. Don't they like
oh,
pause?
yeah.
I don't.
You're
I don't
right.
really
I
give
don't
a.
really give a. If you're trying to top that, stop that.
Okay, so I did a Google search after we did this episode, and it turns out that, in fact, they did not do their own voices for the
They
rap.
did
It
not
was
top that.
a post-production addition. They were like, we need more music in here. And they when these two actors went to go see the movie for the first time, they're like, those aren't our voices. So, yeah, Illuminati
Performed
confirmed.
By TK Michaels.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
This is a great episode. As we mentioned on this episode, it is one of the first guests that we had in mind when we decided to do this podcast, and probably the movie that I had seen the most times out of any movie we've ever done.
Yeah, same. Teen Witch is like culturally so relevant to every millennial, and if it's not relevant to you, I'm sorry to say you are no longer a millennial. No, but it
or
was
you didn't have Disney Channel.
Yeah, I guess. No, it was honestly on so often, and it was just like so horny and raunchy and ridiculous and amazing. And we talk a lot of behind the scenes, the connections with Teen Witch and Gossip Girl. And we just had one of the best guests on this episode, Christina Warren. So thank you so much, Christina, for joining us.
And I've done a lot of thinking about Teen Witch and the iconic songs in this. And I think my request out there to any drag queen looking for a new lip sync song, I Like Boys is ripe for the taking. Like, I like boys. Can you even imagine just like
oh,
a cute little like
my God.
Leotard situation, some leg warmers? Like, I'm just putting it out there. Free idea for any performers out there.
Or popular girl. I'm gonna be the most popular girl. Honestly, I Like Boys is even better though.
Also, just as we find out from this episode, there is no official cast recording or movie recording. So anybody out there who wants to like scrape together all these MP3s for us, I would listen to this on repeat if it was on vinyl or anything for that matter.
Same. Honestly, I did just get a record player, and maybe I should figure out how to make vinyl records and just kind of scrape it together.
Yeah. Well, all
Enjoy.
I have to say is I don't really give a – if you're talking about – I don't even know what the lyrics are.
So top that.
True my entire life, and that is I want to be the most popular girl, and this song lives rent-free in my head. I am so excited for today's show. Sarah, where to begin? Where to start?
I mean, do we start with the shoulder pads or the zip-up jean skirts, the mini skirts? I don't know, the saxophone playing. I think we should start by introducing our guest.
Christina. Yes, absolutely. And Christina, you were our first person that when we thought of this show and we were thinking of who our first guest would like, who's like someone where we're like, okay, this has to be their movie. Like loosely, we kind of reach out to our guests and we say, hey, pick three franchises. But when we pitched this series to each other, we said, oh my gosh, we have to get Christina for Teen Witch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for inviting me to the Teen Witch episode, because when I saw that you had the podcast, I was like, I want to be on. And then you DM'd me, you were like, yes, you can come on and talk about Teen Witch. And I was like, yes, yes, like perfect. That's exactly what I want to talk about, because like you, I also want to be the most popular girl, and the song has been living rent-free in my head for 30 years. And yeah.
I guess you could say top that.
Top that.
I am so excited to have a true expert on the show. I want to say deep during the global Panera, I was up at like 3 a.m. and having a philosophical thread where Christina educated me on the odd, bizarre connection to Blake Lively, which I think we should just start out with, Christina, yes. because this reemerged my interest and love for this film.
Okay, so this is amazing. And when I learned this, I actually think I learned this about the same time Blake Lively blew up, to be honest. I think it was Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. I think then I was aware that she was Robin Lively's sister. And I'm not sure, and I recognized the name. I was like, Lively, that's not that common. I looked it up and I was like, Teen Witch's little sister. So yes, Blake Lively, married to Ryan Reynolds, you know, big actress, is the baby sister of Robin Lively, who played Louise, the protagonist in Teen Witch. And there's a photo that was on Instagram. I also like have it in this document because I took notes and did research for this. I'm such a nerd. But there's this photo of the guy who played Brad, Dan Gauthier, Robin Lively, and a baby Blake Lively. And it is the cutest thing, like, because she was like, Robin was like 15. I think that like the guy who played Brad was like 24. And like Blake is like probably like a year old, like maybe, you know, and like completely just like pure like Gerber face. It is amazing. In my research, and this is what's even more amazing, apparently Blake Lively, I didn't know this until I read this oral history that Slashdot published like 5 years ago. Blake Lively is apparently a massive fan of the film, and not just like a little bit of a fan. Like, Robin Lively learned and like recorded a professional version with her husband of the song from the final scene when they're at the dance and they're dancing. They recorded that for her wedding to Ryan Reynolds and like presented it to them at their wedding.
That's incredible.
And like, That's just shocking. So that's how big of a fan like she is of this movie. So apparently like the younger Lively siblings are really into it. And yeah, Teen Witch is Gossip Girl's sister, which is just so cool. Like if you think about it, also like Serena, like there's a connection there with like Serena and Gossip Girl, Serena and Teen Witch. It works.
I feel like what you're trying to tell me is that Blake Lively is a witch.
I mean, I think she is for sure. She's got magical powers, but no, totally. Like, I feel like it is. I don't know. Just the fact that to me, like Teen Witch and Gossip Girl, like, are related is. I mean, I know Blake Lively wasn't Gossip Girl; it was Dan, whatever. But like, you know, that the star of Gossip Girl is sisters with Teen Witch is just so great.
I would love to know from both of you, how did you consume this film as a child? Because personally, this was on Disney Channel 24/7. Yes. How did you get introduced to this? Because this is technically a 1989 film, but of course I was watching this for a large span of years on the Disney Channel.
Yeah, same. Sarah, how were you watching it?
Same. It was exactly the same. The funny thing is that I remembered this being my mom and my's favorite film of all time. But when I had her come over for the rewatch before this episode. And when we started watching it, she was like, I don't think I have season. I was like, you're lying. And then like, you know, the saxophone scene comes out and she's like, no, I'm not sure. I'm like, mom, you have to. And then all of a sudden, you know, Popular Girl song comes out, and she's like, oh my God, I remember. Okay. Yeah. So it was 100% every single time it was on Disney Channel, I was watching it.
Yeah, so it was on the Disney Channel. It was also on like HBO and Cinemax. I think it was on Cinemax more than HBO, but it was on all three of them. And I think, because here's the thing, I hadn't watched it in such a long time. I'd seen like Top That and some of the other scenes, but I hadn't watched the whole thing in so many years that when I was rewatching it, I was struck by, like, it's a PG-13 movie, but there are some jokes and some things that like Disney doesn't do now. They definitely wouldn't have done it in the 90s. So yeah. I wonder, did they like edit it? Like, I know they didn't edit the scene where they're in like the house, right? Like the saxophone. Like, I know they didn't edit out like the faux sex scene, but like, I don't remember there being like the sex ed talk. I don't remember there being like the teacher, you know, finding birth control in Louise's purse, which A, very progressive for the film. Also, what a jerk of the teacher to do that. Like, I don't remember that at all. And I watched that movie all the time on the Disney Channel. So I wonder if they like made edits, you know, to keep it more Disney focused.
We were definitely talking about this when we were watching it, because it feels like the, you know, late 80s and early 90s movies were just a lot more raunchy.
They were so horny.
They were Porky's. Yes, it all started with Porky's.
But also, like, not just horny and raunchy in that way, but also just, like, the jokes and, like, her, like, 12-year-old brother just, eating food and smearing chocolate on the walls and just, like, joking about, like, farting. I don't know, just, like, all of that kind of just raunchy humor was very popular around this time. And also, you know, I thought that the kissing scene, when I was watching it again this time, I was like, wow, you are kissing, like, full on. But nowadays, we don't really have that, but we have, like, full on sex scenes is what.
Right.
You know? Yeah, totally. So it's like, it's kind of interesting. Like, we show less of the lead up and less of the, like, sexually chargedness and more of the just, like, raw, like, here's, I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I had the same thought. I was like, wow, they are really kissing. I was like, dude, like, he's got his, like, hand, like, in her blouse. I'm like, he's, like, completely, like, they're, like, going to third base. Like, they are doing this, right? Which is, as you say, now you might, it might be more, except I still don't know if they would do full-on sex in a PG-13 movie. But, you know, that's more common, but they don't show any of it, right? Like, it's certainly not charged.
Exactly. Have either of you seen Grease 2?
Oh my God, yeah, unfortunately.
So this felt very similar to Grease 2 in that there's a song about, like, you know, puberty, biology, you know, that kind of stuff. And then it had this kind of, like, so it's not even, it's this weird parallel between not being a jukebox musical and not being a musical. Because it's all in that style of Footloose where it's songs that aren't necessarily furthering the plot or the story, but some of them are bops. Like, some are legitimately very catchy.
So, like, I Like Boys is legitimately kind of a catchy thing. And Most Popular Girl, like, no, you're right. So, funny story. My one of my college roommates, her favorite movies were Teen Witch and Grease 2. And Teen Witch I could get behind. Yeah, they does. And, like, Teen Witch I could get behind. I was like, look, it is a terrible film, but I will watch it a million times. I have seen it a million times. It is cringe. But, like, there's something lovable about it. Grease 2, I personally don't find any redeeming value in at all. But, you know, it was maybe before I was born. I don't know. But she was really into both of them. But you're right. So when I was reading this oral history, this was what was interesting. Originally, it was not written as a musical. And it was written even hornier and even more like Porky's, because the girl and the guy who wrote it, they were trying to sell a movie, basically. I think, like, the writer, like, her boyfriend had left her or something, and she was like, I need to get paid. So they, you know, wrote some kind of, like, Teen Wolf had come out, and they wrote some sort of, you know, movie, kind of trying to ride on those coattails. And the studio, which was very small, that they took it to, who their whole thing was, they were like, we just want to put this in international markets and then maybe direct to video. Like, they didn't care about, like, theatrical release in the US. They were like, where we'll make our money is we won't spend a lot of money on the production and we'll just license this internationally. And that's how that company worked, is that one of the producers and the director, I guess, they were looking at, and they're like, well, what if this was a musical? The director came in, he was like, maybe this is a musical. And so one of the producers, like, tore out pages of the script and put in blank stuff and was just like, we're going to put songs here. And then she got together with the guy who wrote the music and, you know, they just inserted the songs into those moments. And then after the film was done, it apparently performed well in their tests. And so they went back, and that was how Top That happened, because the studio people were like, can you give us a rap song? And then they went back and they wrote and then recorded Top That after filming had already completed.
I think this is the perfect time to kind of give the synopsis and the one sentence Wikipedia, because that provides what Christina just described, provides so much context to this. So it's classified as an American teen fantasy comedy film. Which I just love that very specific one. And like Christina said, it was originally pitched as a female version of Teen Wolf and later reworked into a film of its own. And the film features numerous impromptu rap musical numbers. The like very short synopsis is, after a bike accident, the sweet yet nerdy 15-year-old Louise Miller knocks on the door of a strange looking house, hoping to use the phone. Instead, she meets a unique but welcoming woman, the seer, Madam Serena. And I just want to mention a couple of things about this part. And Christina, you can kind of, you know, fact check me based on the research that you did. But So it is a cult classic now, having a newer and younger audience because of HBO, Disney, Cinemax, like we mentioned. Stephanie Marcus of the Huffington Post calls Top That the worst song of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Drew Grant of Nerve.com stated, if you've never seen the original rap scene from the 80s classic Teen Witch, you must immediately stop what you are doing. Watch it right now. It's everything wonderful and terrible about that decade rolled into one misguided appropriation of hip hop. And I also just wanted to mention that the production budget was $2.5 million, but it only grossed $3,875 in its opening box office.
Right, because it was only in theaters for a week,
and only $27,843 for its entire run. And part of the reason they claim is because the opening weekend was also Field of Dreams and Pet Sematary. So fair, but also, yeah. And the last tidbit, in April of 2008, did you all know that Ashley Tisdale signed?
Yes.
Yes.
To potentially remake it?
That would have been so good. Now I think it should be Olivia Rodrigo. I think that if they do it, like, get somebody from High School Musical, the TV series, right? Like, like, honestly, I mean, she might be too big at this point, but also that would be how they could get it produced. I think they would need Olivia Rodrigo, and that do it for Netflix. Like, that would be huge. Or no, actually just do it for Disney Plus, because she's got a contract with them.
Yeah.
That would be great. Yeah, no. So when I did my research, because I'd had the same thought, I was like, oh, wow, that box office was abysmal. No, they only had it in theaters for 7 days, and they didn't care about that. The whole point, literally, of this company that bought it, and I think that the actual production budget was like half of that figure that's cited, was it was this company called like Trans World Entertainment or something, not to be confused with the Ponzi scheme Transcontinental Records, that was Lou Pearlman's thing in the 90s. With the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. But their whole business model was just to have these really low budget films that they could just basically flip and sell in the international market for a bunch of money. So like they would, you know, put it out in the Philippines and put it out in Japan and put it out in, you know, parts of Europe and put it out in non-English speaking countries, and then just make bank because you didn't have the internet, you didn't have cable in a lot of those places. And so if you had content, especially Americanized content, that you could just kind of deliver, you could apparently, I guess, in theory, make a ton of money. And then it just became this cult classic because HBO and Disney aired it like it was never not on TV.
I would say, so this in my mind has always been, do you guys know the concept of there's like a movie with music and like a musical, or like, in theater, we'll say like, oh, this is a play with music in it, versus like Footloose is a great example of that, I think, where there's a soundtrack and there's, you know, songs that you associate with it. But we're not to expect that Kevin Bacon is singing Footloose at the end of the movie. However, there is a Broadway musical that does slap a little bit. But I thought it was so interesting when I was doing the research for this that it said, when they never came out with a soundtrack for this, like they never recorded music to be intended to put on a soundtrack. So these songs are so popular, but they've never been available for consumption in any sort of audio format.
It's totally crazy. Like, I think that they actually released like a cast recording of the musical version that they staged like off Broadway, but the movie itself has never had a release. And at this point, I mean, who knows? The guy who wrote the songs might still have the masters, but who even knows? Like, I think that just shows like how slapdash this whole thing was, which comes across in the film. I think it's part of the charm. Like, part of the charm is that this is a, like, because, you know, I think a lot of people watch it the same way that they watch things like Teen Wolf or Just One of the Guys or some of those other, you know, like movies kind of that era. But the production value here is like not comparable, right? Like Blake Lively's mom had to do her own hair extensions and like pay for them because like they didn't have a hairstylist until like late into production. Like it did not have, like, they did not have any money, and that's part of the charm.
I actually saw the musical version of this that the Groundlings did in Los Angeles that they performed at SF Sketchfest, gosh, I think like 6 or 7 years ago. It was supposed to have Drew Doege in it. It had a bunch of really well-known comedians in it. The girl who played Louise could sing, but it wasn't the officially sanctioned version of it. It was more just kind of a comedy group from the Groundlings putting it together, and they used all the songs from it. So it was lovely. It was very charming and was a nice nod to, you know, how strange the movie is. And, you know, you can just say lines in this. You just say the word top that and it's funny. I mean,
no, you say top that, people know. Well, do you guys remember this happened, I guess, about 11 years ago, but Rachel Antonoff, who's Jack Antonoff, the, you know, Bleachers and Fun and like record producer extraordinaire of Lorde and Taylor Swift and Lana Del Rey and other people. His sister created like a recreation of Top That with Aaliyah Shawkat and Jack Antonoff. And it's like one of the funniest things I've ever seen, because it's like a shot for shot recreation of that scene, but with Aaliyah Shawkat as the Polly character and as Jack Antonoff as the, you know, the whatever the rapper guy's name was. It's
that's amazing.
So funny.
It's the best song in the whole film. I mean, I guess it's visually.
I don't know.
I guess what I think of, like, how much I think about that scene on a daily basis.
No, totally. Yeah. Well, it's a question for you guys. For me, growing up, even though I watched this movie a ton, that scene, even though it's iconic and whatnot, like, even as a little kid, I think even when I was like 7, I was like, this is the most cringe thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, did you guys feel that way? Because I was like, this is so cringe. I was like, there's nothing cool about this. Like, I never thought the movie was cool, even though I watched it a million times.
Yeah, maybe we should go through a couple of the iconic songs and kind of dances. So I think that the popular girl song, this is a song that's played in the locker room, and all of the quote unquote popular girls are wearing these like light lilac purple, you know, onesies, not onesies, but leotards, maybe swimsuits. I think they were leotards anyways. And they basically just start dancing around. And the thing that I always thought was the funniest, even as a child, was it seemed like they were performing for Louise, because she was the only one not involved. And they just kept like doing these funny little tricks with towels where, you know, it looked like someone was double height because they stood on each other's shoulders and put like a towel to cover them. And they had like their sweatshirt where they pulled the arms, you know, out, so it looked like they were stretching her arms and things like this, just really silly things. And even as a child, I thought that it was silly, but I also just loved how much fun it looked. So for that one, and also like they were wearing leotards, so it was still kind of like, you know, oh my gosh, should I be watching this kind of scene when I was little? Because they're like girls in leotards in the locker room. That one I thought like held up. Like, yes, it's kind of funny, but also holds up.
Yeah, no, I like boys. No, it's totally like a jam. Like that one holds up, and then like both the song at the beginning and the song at the end, you know, like are there are a number of them where like Finest Hour is like the end, and then there's like whatever the one was at the beginning, like when like the opening song or whatever. Yeah, no, like there were definitely some bops. Like these songs will be in my head forever, for sure. Like, I didn't think the movie was cool, but I liked those scenes.
It's interesting because sometimes the characters sing the songs, and then we're led to believe that there's like a cinematic universe of Teen Witch where there's that pop star who gives her the jean jacket, and she's a girl singing the song at the beginning, I believe. Like, she wakes up to that song. So it's very interesting how to justify these choices in the script. It's very jukebox musical, where it's just like, oh yeah, like that's the song for the radio, or like, oh, we'll just, because there's no world in which we would see Louise sing that song. It's a great song.
No, it's totally great. But yeah, that what did they call her? Like Shauna? Was
she
that her name?
Like the rock star from that era that had like that floppy hat with the sunflower and the jean jacket. She was just She was everything. I totally believed she was a pop star.
So, to be fair, she was played by Cindy Valentine, who actually does sing. Like, she hit the Billboard Dance Club charts in 87 and 89 with two of her songs. And she was a composer, is a composer, producer, actress, and performing artist. So, she was legit, a pop star, rock star. But,
how interesting
not
that they
Shanna.
Didn't have a soundtrack. Not I feel Shanna. Like that would be such a... Like that, this must have been such a hit for her? I guess we don't know.
I don't know. I think it could have been. Like, I mean, because originally, I think that they'd wanted to go after Debbie Gibson to be Louise. Now they could not afford Debbie Gibson, is I think what the issue was, which makes sense because I think they started working on this a couple years before it came out, and that was like, you know. Might have been before she completely blew up, but she was still really big. But like Debbie Gibson would have been like, if you were making it today, that's why I said Olivia Rodrigo is a bit, you know what I mean? Like they're different types of artists, but that's the sort of, you know, person I can see that they would maybe want to cast like to be the main role. Although it would have been interesting, like maybe they could have afforded to pay Debbie to be like the pop star, but, yeah, no, that's it is so interesting that they didn't release a soundtrack. That is so bizarre. Do you know, have people, like, I haven't looked up this, I'm sure people have people created like their own homemade versions?
What's interesting is that Sarah Nemitz did record the single Finest Hour that Cindy Valentine actually composed for her for the musical Teen Witch the musical.
Interesting. Are either of you familiar with Peaches Christ, the drag queen? So Peaches Christ is this wonderful drag queen here in San Francisco, and back in the pre-pandemic times would do these amazing, midnight maniac screenings of cultural, iconic pop culture movies like Teen Witch, and bring people from the cast and come and interview them. So they'd have a full drag performance of Grease 2 before Grease 2 and then bring the hunk from that on stage and interview him now, you know, that he's had time away from it. And I was reading online that Peaches Christ did a screening of this, and the actor who played the little brother, who is just so fantastic and chews the scenery and is such an iconic like child actor in this, I feel, really disliked this film for a long time into his adulthood. And he said after he did the Midnight for Maniacs, screening with Peaches Christ in San Francisco, that he found a new appreciation for it. He couldn't believe how much of a cult classic it had become. And that is mostly what I've read online, is a lot of the actors, famously the girl who plays the best friend, the top that rap solo, said it was the worst summer of her life working on this film. And it's so interesting to see have this renaissance now.
Yeah, I have to imagine that was hard for her, because her character, first of all, they never resolved the fact their friendship just like ended. Like it was nothing was ever resolved. It was like Polly was mad that she was popular, and then she was like sitting alone at a table with kind of looking forlornly at the top that guy. And then Louise comes in and like looks all hot and starts, dancing and making out with Brad. And like then the movie just ends. So you don't even know like, well, did they make up or what? But yeah, I have to imagine for her, because that character, they didn't make her look very good. And she had to do that terrible rap, which is iconic. But also like genuinely like it's like a Michael Scott sort of moment where, I feel like I would get secondhand embarrassment watching that. You know what I mean? So I have to imagine that was really hard on her, poor thing.
Did she actually rap that? Do we know?
I'm pretty sure she did.
I always assumed as a child, maybe because I did see a lot online that famously top that the mouths do not match with the movement. So I guess I always assumed as a kid that this was them lip syncing. This always felt like a lip sync to me.
Well, yeah, because they were lip syncing I'm sure, a studio recording.
Right,
but she was just like, I mean, I guess that's what the magic is. She really rapped it on this recording. So hands off to her for like nailing the track. Honestly, it's not a terrible rap.
And I don't think she's too sad about it. She later, her name is Mandy Ingberg. She later became a yoga instructor and has like a successful book, Yogalosophy, and DVD training set. Also titled Yogalosophy. So
apparently she's also taught celebrities, including Jennifer Aniston, Kate Beckinsale, Jennifer Lawrence, and Helen Hunt. So good for you, Mandy.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mandy. You know who she reminds me of? A live action version of Roxanne's best friend from Goofy Movie.
Yes. Oh, yes. My God.
Stacy. Talk to me, talk to me, talk to me, baby. That is her. That is Stacy in real life.
My gosh. I love that.
Where she doesn't get any real character development and she just is the nerd. She's like the, you know, female Patty Simcox of the group. Just like too eager, there and earnestly. It would have been so nice for them to, for her to let her in on the secret, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's another thing, right? So the whole point of this movie, you know, the whole kind of plot is that like when Louise turns 16, she finds out she has these magical powers and she's a witch and that she's apparently, I guess, maybe been reincarnated and she's like, you know, reunited with her amulet and she meets, you know, this Madame Serena who teaches her these spells. But like, she, when she gets Brad to fall in love with her, she's then not happy because she wants him to really love her. And I love Madame Serena's response, which is like, why? Like, why? Which I think is actually a very good question to ask. Like, why does it matter? Not the point of the movie, I get, but like, I'm glad that there was an adult who was being realistic and all these things. But then like, you know, you feel like there might be some conflict between like, is she going to explain? Is she going to tell anyone? But then the movie just ends, right? Like they built up to this conflict the last 5 minutes of the movie. And at least, you know, like nobody ever finds out. Like her parents don't know she's a witch, you know, like her boyfriend doesn't know, her best friend doesn't know. It's just like this weird
thought that's been happening. I thought that the ending is her just saying, you know what, instead of using my powers to change my life, I am just going to like relinquish them. And that's why she throws the amulet back to Madame Serena. And she's just like,
yeah,
I'm just going to live normally. And so no one needs to know she's a witch because she's, you know, at least in this moment, planning on not being a witch, just kind of ignoring that part.
No, fair enough. That's true. It's just still, this feels like they were leading up to some conflict of like, if is anybody going to find out, you know, about her powers or not? Nobody ever does. We should talk about one brilliant piece of casting. And that would be the casting of Dick Sargent as her dad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's Darren number two in Bewitched.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Yes. I have a unique behind-the-scenes story on Zelda Rubinstein, who, when I think of this film, I think of Zelda, right? Like, she was totally such a iconic, kind of like, almost like a fairy godmother character in this film, I would have to say.
Real quick, before you go into this, Chloe, she was absolutely one of my favorite actresses growing up, because she was also in Poltergeist.
She was in Poltergeist.
Chloe did not likely see as a child, but that was one of my favorite series of films.
So, my story involves Poltergeist, y'all.
Yes!
As we know, my father, Frank Condon, was a director in Los Angeles when I was growing up. Around this time, I was born in 1989, and my dad and mom met each other like in the Hollywood area. And I grew up hearing these really interesting stories about how he worked with this small theater company, literally called the Little People's Theater, which was all little people actors. And you have to understand that back in the 70s and 80s, the only roles for, you know, little people, and this was still when like really derogatory terms were being used towards little people, and they had a whole theater company where they would do scenes from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, like really try to get taken seriously as actors and try to go out there and get roles like this. So Zelda's first film ever was this really, really bizarre comedy called Under the Rainbow, which starred Chevy Chase, and it also had Carrie Fisher in it.
Wow.
And it was I would not recommend watching the trailer necessarily. Just watching the trailer, it does not seem like this has aged well. And it's literally a comedy nonfiction, comedy fiction story about all of the little people who were hired for the Wizard of Oz staying in a hotel and all the shenanigans that ensued. And it did, just the trailer alone seemed to have some like racist undertones. They are also referred to as a derogatory term in this film. So would not necessarily recommend checking this film out. But to give some context there, like this was such a huge platform for Zelda as a little person to play this role, because I feel like this was a really deep acting role to be doing at this time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've never seen this Under the Rainbow thing. I'm a huge Wizard of Oz fan, so I do know that in real life, you know, so many of the little people who were in the Wizard of Oz got married and you know, sort of families and stuff, and did get it. Like, I've heard them tell some of their own tales about the shenanigans they got into, because for many of them, it was the first time they'd ever been around so many people like them before. But yeah, I'll skip that film, but that's really interesting. That was her first role.
And so Zelda Rubinstein actually worked in the local Sacramento theater scene, where my dad had a theater company. And famously, my dad loves to tell this story. He was rehearsing a play on stage at his theater company, and all of a sudden, one of the actresses started screaming, like bloody murder, was so, so terrified. And it was because Zelda Rubinstein had come to visit my dad at his rehearsal, and she thought it was Poltergeist, like, coming to get her. She was like, oh my God. Absolutely not. And of course, afterwards, my dad was like, okay, let's introduce, this is Zelda, you know, obviously. But she had such a brand association. It's kind of the curse of being in an iconic film like that, right? Like, right. It's so hard to be seen as anything else other than, you know, Poltergeist or Teen Witch in this case. And I really think it speaks to just these two iconic roles for this woman, for us to know her by. I just love that she was able to play kind of these meaty roles.
Definitely, definitely. And like, and she was very good. Like, she was so good in Teen Witch, you know, like, the acting is not great in it. She was definitely the best, I think, of everyone. And I liked how they treated her character. You know, it was never like her size. None of that was ever commented on, you know, she was just a madam, you know, she was just a psychic and a witch, you know, that was it.
I loved seeing on Wikipedia that she was a huge advocate for the, AIDS epidemic, for fighting AIDS, yeah. And was a huge voice to the gay community. And she was I met her many times. She came to a lot of my dad's shows, and it always felt so special getting to meet her, because I saw Teen Witch literally every single day at home. And it was truly one of the very few times that I felt starstruck. Like, I couldn't believe that I was meeting the Zelda Rubinstein.
That's amazing. I used to watch the show Picket Fences, and apparently she was on that, but I haven't seen that show in years, but she was on like half the episodes of that series. That was, and that was a big show, or a well, critically acclaimed show in the 90s. But that's so cool that you got to know her.
Yeah, that is really neat, Chloe. I'm only very much jealous. I think it's kind of interesting, though, like the late 80s, early 90s, the only two actors that I think were in my kind of, you know, childhood sphere were Zelda and then also Phil Fondacaro. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. But he was in Double Double Toil and Trouble, which is, you know, Mary-Kate and Ashley direct-to-TV film. But similarly, in that one, there weren't really, like, jokes about him, or his size really wasn't commented on, other than he lived in a home that was built for him, like, for his size. And so the man who was very tall in the film couldn't come in because it was built for him. But it's kind of interesting that, like, you know, it seemed to be maybe this was a time when that, you know, the work that, sorry, Chloe, what was it called? The Little People's Actors Guild?
I couldn't find what the exact name was online, because truly this was back in the 70s before the internet even exists. And I was asking my dad about this. I actually called him right before this podcast episode to kind of ask, like, you know, what was the history of this theater? And he said it was truly just kind of this group of little people actors who wanted to be taken seriously and to do serious work. And they actually asked my dad to be the artistic director, but he was, you know, too early on in his career, I think he said, to take that on at the time. But it was such an interesting, like, concept. Like, he was doing deep, deep work. Like, think of the work that Peter Dinklage does on Game of Thrones, and how he's played so many roles where he can seriously get into these characters. And that these were the conversations that they were having. They were just like, I want to be taken seriously as an actor, but I'm always seen as an elf, or, you know, some sort of, you know, character, or creature, or troll. And, you know, of course, we see a lot of people getting works in films like Star Wars for body doubling, but they just wanted to play real human people, just like real people in the world and not be regarded by size.
Yeah. And I think their efforts clearly have been working and were already at this time. But yeah, Peter Dinklage is like acting is phenomenal. He was more recently in a film from 2020 called I Care a Lot, which is also featuring Rosamund Pike. And it was a phenomenal film. If you have not seen it, I believe it's still on Netflix. I think that's where it launched. But it is a phenomenal film. And he is just like commanding the screen and it has nothing to do with his size. And I appreciate so much the effort that this group of actors did in the 70s to make roles for more people, because these actors are just phenomenal. And I don't know what my childhood would have been without Zelda.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, very much in that vein. And, you know, in the theater world, we call it colorblind casting, where, you know, seeing representation, seeing a Black woman play Belle in Beauty and the Beast is life-changing for a lot of people. But, mm-hmm. you know, this comes into play a lot with, you know, we see so many depictions in these musicals and movies that just have not aged very well. And I think it's so interesting now to see like, oh, we can have any kind of shape, size, color. We've already had all of the things going on with Jagged Little Pill on Broadway and fixing the way that these Broadway musicals come back and change, you know, in a 2021 world. And it's really exciting. I just really think it's cool to have her have this huge platform. I mean, she was on my TV every day.
Yep. One of my favorite parts of this film is when she turns the frog into her prince.
And so cute.
And y'all were talking earlier about the bad kind of like, you know, lip syncing, and my favorite part, and I remembered it right when it happened, is when her prince responds with ribbit, but his lips are literally saying ribbit while the voiceover is like a frog like croaking. And it's just, it was the funniest thing ever. And I'll put that on the pod somehow.
So many hunks, so many freaking hunks in this movie. Like,
oh my
the
God.
Frog,
oh,
yeah. Like Brad, like so many hunks.
I mean, Brad was super hot.
His short shorts and crop top, and then he takes it off in the sun after football practice. Are you kidding me?
Okay. I remember as a child feeling uncomfortable with how long the sexy striptease in yes. the abandoned building was. And watching yes. it back, it was just as long as I remembered. And I associate this song with like peak teen horniness mm-hmm. because I remember being a young child. Like I had seen this movie 100 times at this point, being at the dentist and then playing some soft like jazz, and that song came on, and it, when I tell you, it stirred something in my DNA. I was like, oh, this is a sexy song and I should not be in this dentist's office. Like I associated such, like, this was such a weird horny film, especially that abandoned building striptease.
Yes. And then Louise, like, she takes off like her, like, sure, she's just in like a kind of a, you know, loose tank top and whatnot. And it's like running after him. And I'm like, okay, what is this? Right. Like, this is just, also, he's so hot, but he's so clearly 25 years old. Like, yes.
All of the men felt very old.
Actually, Robin Lively was 19 when this was filmed, and Dan Gauthier was 28.
That checks out. I yeah. just felt very uncomfortable with how old these men were going after these teen girls.
Yes, yes. And did you know that Lisa Fuller, who plays Dan's, you know, girlfriend, they actually married in real life?
I found this out yesterday. My mind was blown. That's insane.
That's amazing.
I love that for them.
Felt that he was such a hunk, and watching it back, I was laughing out loud, you guys, when he was like, over here, up here, and then she'd be like, what the, and then he'd be yes. like, I'm over here in this corner. It was very Labyrinth, just like, no, up on this shelf. Like, I'm like, what, Brad, just hold still, come on.
I was just saying, when he just pops over the staircase, that one, and he
I
just
laughed
like,
out loud.
Oh my, the whole room laughed out loud.
No, when he did that, for sure. And no, and I don't know about either of you, he was in a number of other things. I most remember him as being like the lawyer that Kelly dates in the Saved by the Bell Hawaiian Style, who turns out to be kind of shady and like not a nice guy. And so I remember him from that. I was like, oh, that was the, again, like way too old to be playing like Kelly Kapowski's boyfriend, who she was ostensibly still like 17 years old or whatever when they did the Hawaiian style, like going to Hawaii movie or whatever. And so that's kind of like, but I remember him from that. But yes, when he just like appears from upstairs and just kind of when you appear, you're like, it's so funny. But also, he's so good looking. Like,
oh my God. This is such an era. I feel like the late 80s, early 90s hunks were just so big. Yes. And these hunks were always like in their late 20s. Like,
oh,
the
yeah.
peak performance of a like almost early 30s man. And even I remember even watching Top That and thinking, these men are rapping and they're too old to be rapping. Like, these aren't teens.
No, totally. I mean, and the thing is, like, I think they even make, like, a Rob Lowe, like, reference at one point. And, you know, but he was totally of that era, right? And, like no disrespect at all to Dan Gauthier or whatever. But he was kind of, like, you know, a budget Rob Lowe. And which I don't think anybody should be, like, embarrassed about, because Rob Lowe, especially in the 80s, was, like, 90s, too, like, just hot. But, yeah, like, you're right. Like, it was a real moment for those types of guys, and they were always, yeah, they were always like 25 to 28. Like, they were always like really old.
Steve from Full House, huh?
Yeah,
you know, like just, oh, yeah, those hunky. Remember all the Step by Step boys, hunks, hunks, hunks. Just like it was such a renaissance of hunks.
Okay, but y'all, Dan and Lisa, not only are they married now, but they actually met on Teen Witch, and they now have an acting studio together.
Aww.
And it's them. Just like, and they're both just still just so gorgeous. And I don't know, for some reason, it just makes me so happy.
No, that makes me so happy. And then they've been together for like 30 something years. Yeah. They met on this movie. I love that. That, you know, like that's kind so of awesome, to be totally honest.
Yeah. If you live near Cathedral City in California, you should hit up Dan and Lisa, and maybe you can become actor too.
I loved the character actors in this. Some of them. I have to say it's very, very hard to like the teacher character who goes to the car wash. Such an iconic physical comedy scene. But him pulling out that birth control.
No, he's terrible.
I hated him. I always hated this man when I watched this film. He was our enemy.
Mm-hmm. Same.
No, he's the worst. But the female teacher, Marcia Wallace.
Mm.
Such an iconic character actor of that time. If you go to her IMDb, she's been in literally a million things. She was, of course, Stephanie's teacher and Michelle's teacher from Full House on a bunch of episodes. She literally has been in everything. Go check her out. She's absolutely amazing. But she felt like she was every teacher. You know what I mean?
She
like
was,
every
yep.
teacher ever in well, one woman.
Well, I mean, she was most famous. She passed away a number of years ago, but she was Miss Krabappel on The Simpsons.
Yes.
Which, so, you know, which is like the ultimate, you know, like teacher character. So you're right. She was on Full House. She was on the Bob Newhart show, The Simpsons. She was the teacher in Teen Witch. She's fantastic.
Such an amazing character actress. Like, love to see her pop up in everything. Like, literally, I was staring at her trying to think, like, where have I seen this woman before? And I was like, oh, everywhere. This woman is every teacher I've ever watched on television.
It was funny because my mind immediately went to Full House as well. I was like, oh, yeah, she was the lady who used to, like, sexually harass Joey on Full House.
That's right. She was in love with Uncle Joey.
I was thinking about, I remember also always hating the male teacher. And then, you know, we were watching this just last night and I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure that kind of thing is illegal now. And
yes.
And Adrian was like, he would totally be canceled in today's culture, which I thought was funny because I think I've mentioned Adrian a couple of times on the pod, but he literally thought podcast was like a company. I was like, oh, we're releasing the podcast. And he was like, oh, how do I find it? And I'm like, anywhere where they stream podcasts. And he's like, but is it an app? And I was like, I had to teach him what podcasts were. Anyways.
That's so cute.
But also then I was reminded of a recent video that I saw where a teacher this year in the year of 2021 dressed up with like feathers in her hair and started fake dancing, trying to get her students to remember SOHCAHTOA, which is a math term for sine, cosine, and tangent. And I'm just like, you know, maybe teachers can still be that bad.
When I saw this, I immediately thought of the viral video that happened, I think, in the last couple of years, where a teacher answers a phone that was ringing in class, and it ended up being an April Fool's prank. But the girl, he was like, okay, we have a rule in this class that if the phone rings, you have to answer it in front of everyone, and it's someone with Planned Parenthood results.
Right.
And the overall public opinion is like, F no. this guy. Like, that's absolutely, like, you cannot do that in this the year of our Lord 2021. But I hated this teacher then, and I hate him now. Yep. What an unlikable character.
But I will say, as an actor, I think he did a phenomenal job, because the acting, to be able to go from being such an unlikable character to then standing up on that platform and literally stripping, but like,
yes,
he did such a phenomenal job with that scene. And then walking through and like trying to pay, it was hilarious. Especially because he was so unlikable.
The material is problematic. The actor's iconic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, it was so funny because I had the same thought as Adrian. I was like, oh, he would get canceled today. He would get fired, like for both like the reading, like the note in class, but going through the purse, I was like, oh yeah, you would lose your job, right? Like there's no way that could happen. But no, his performance, totally iconic, you know, the whole, it was also funny that, you know, they treated him stripping in class as if, oh, you just need some rest, not like we're putting you on suspension. Cause now like, you know, you almost, you know, disrobe completely in front of the class, you would be like fired, like wouldn't even be a question. So it was really funny that they treated it that way. But no, his performance was iconic. And very over the top.
This kind of explains it. The actor is Sheldon Berman, also known as Shelley Berman. And he came up as a sketch comedy writer and actor. So he even taught humor writing at USC, University of Southern California. He's got like tons of awards. Clearly he was a comedic actor, but yeah, he's got an incredible career.
Totally a master of physical comedy for this particular film too. I feel like, you know, there were so many parallels to this for Grease and Grease 2 for me, where I'm like, it's Grease with less character development, and then it like had a baby with Footloose, because none of the songs are furthering their plot. They're just for the sake of singing. Sometimes they're singing it, sometimes they're not. It's like oddly horny, but like we don't know anything about the characters except for maybe Louise. We don't really know that much about Brad, honestly, other than he's cute.
We know that he's cute and he plays football and he's going to USC or UCLA or something, and like he's a senior. Like that's all we know. And you know, Louise, we just know, like, is horny for Brad. And you know, because the film starts out with the brother like having gone through, you know, her diary and like finding out about her Brad horniness, which again is why I actually think it was pretty progressive that she had birth control, like that her mom had like put her on the pill. Like she clearly wasn't sexually active, but her mom was like, well, yeah, if you're going to be writing, you know, diary entries about how horny you are for Brad, like we're going to do that. Like I actually really respect that. But yeah, we don't really know anything about many of the characters. It's just, you know, other than like, okay, she's the geek and he's the popular guy and, you know, they're in Glendale, and that's about it.
Yeah. I want a spin-off, like, Lion King 1.5 type sequel of the teacher having that romance with that guy. Like, I feel like that should just be its own, like, subplot. I would watch that entire film or musical or whatever it would be.
Same.
That would be good. Same. See, this is why we need it. Maybe it doesn't need to be a movie. Maybe it needs to be like a TV show, because then we could go into more like of the psychopathy of the various characters. So, you know, you could like get into like have like an episode where, you know, it's the teacher and she's off, you know, with the guy in Spain or whatever. Or, you know, you have an episode that's like focused on like the mean teacher. Or you have like an episode where you actually learn, like, does Brad do anything, or does he just stare at his, you know, muscles and strip, you know, in front of the mirror? Like, who knows, right?
As one of my parents, which is what we like to call the segment where I put on my lens and as a parent of a 3-year-old, I was actually pretty fascinated with the progressiveness of this film, because like Louise is about to, you know, put a magic spell on Brad and make him fall in love with her, and then decides to stop and decides that, you know, he should have his own free will, and she's going to decide, you know, to do something about herself. And then even then she decides to like change herself and realizes, oh, that's not what I want either. And Brad, like, you know, tells her, oh, I'm so sorry for letting you go home with him. Like, I shouldn't have. And for being like a late 80s film about teens and having it be this raunchy, I was pleasantly surprised by the amount of like maturity that these like teens were having.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I kind of I did actually think about that, because like they did the very typical 80s teen trope, which is Louise is nearly sexually assaulted by a nerdy guy that she's set up with in a car, and she has to like escape the car, and she actually ends up, you know, invoking her first spell, and he ends up disappearing, and the car almost crashes, and then she has to kind of like take her bike home, and that was what set up to how she met Serena in the first place. But like that's a very like tired like 80s trope, which is usually it is kind of a catty kind of gross guy who, you know, ends up, you know, attempting to sexually assault, you know, like a young girl who wants nothing to do with him. But he apologized and he was like, I never should have let that happen. He was in no position to do that. And I was like, okay, like it doesn't make up for the fact that that whole scene was still played for laughs, but that character was like a good guy. It was like self-aware. It was like, hey, I saw this happen and this wasn't okay, which you don't see in many films now, let alone, you know, in the 80s.
Yeah. I don't think that Danny ever apologizes to Sandy in Grease that he like sexually assaults her in the drive.
No.
And they end up like, I don't know, driving into a car into the sky at the end, but I digress. But I think you're totally right. There's like resolution and kind of accountability. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. The whole point of Grease is to change exactly who you are so that you can go all the way with your boyfriend and his, you know, dropout friends and like be and wear hot pants. Now, to be clear, the hot pants are awesome, and like you're you know, like basically sewn on like black leather pants look amazing, and you're Olivia Newton-John, and you're awesome, and your songs are great. But like the message of Grease is not actually good, shall we say?
I feel like the modern day like positive version of this is Mean Girls, right? Where like she goes through the transformation, she realizes the grass isn't greener on the other side, and then she, you know, has to authentically be herself to ultimately fit in. And we never get that in these like 90s films. It's always like, be the most popular girl, literally. Like you want to be the most popular girl. When today's messaging, it seems, is like, be your authentic self and people will like you for who you are.
And this even comes out when they were at the dance before she left with him, and like Brad and Louise step outside and they start like geeking out about something. I can't remember what they were talking about, but they like talk together at the same time about geeking out about something. And it was like, that was one of the moments where it's like, you know what? He actually is like a person. So even though every character was pretty one-dimensional and like, you know, we don't know anything about them, I do feel like it was actually more progressive. And not only that, but the like poster for it, I don't know if y'all have seen it, but it has Brad as the object, which normally posters have a woman as the object where like her, you know, her face isn't shown or, you know, whatever. But in this poster, you know, you get the full on Louise and the full on Madame Serena. And then you get the back shot of Brad just kind of casually looking over his shoulder with like a little bun showing. I mean, like, he's got pants on, but you know, you get a little of that Brad kind of muscles and butt and haircut as like an object, which is fascinating.
We're putting this on social media. This is the wildest poster I've ever seen in my life. Like, graphic design is my passion level.
Yeah.
Yes. Shenanigans.
No, I'm looking at this now. This is, it is amazing. No, but you're right. It totally does not have the, it's the gaze is on him, right? It's definitely not the male gaze sort of thing. He is definitely the object. He's definitely the one being sexualized, which is actually another interesting thing. Now, I think part of it was because in like the thing that I read, she was like 15 or something when they did the movie, and they were worried about like whether she could shoot, you know, the time or not. And her mom was like, well, we were thinking about emancipating her anyway. So that's how they got around the legal, you know, like filming requirements. But so maybe some of it was that, but even in like the proto sex scene, you know, the nearly sex scene, way more of like this stuff, like it lingers on him, right? Yeah. Like he's Now, maybe it's because it was they thought the audience was going to be teenage girls who would be horny for Brad. I don't know. But that's still notable because usually, you know, because Robin Lively, very pretty girl, like gorgeous. It would be gorgeous. Like, yeah, you know, the gaze would be on her mm-hmm. and it wasn't like it was, you know, like, you know, you see her like reaching under his shirt, you know, mm-hmm. you see like
she was in control, which is like acceptable versus like, oh no, like these advances are unwanted.
right. I will say the gaze was definitely on her fashion, though. Oh,
yes.
My God. You know, I luckily was able to watch this with my mom, who, you know, she was 89, right? So she was 25 when this film came out. So, you know, this was her early 20s fashion. And she was saying she never owned one of those zip up skirts because she was too scared that it would become unzipped. She did have many a mini skirt. And the boots with the big, like, crunchy sock at the top, she said those were so incredibly popular that, like, you could, like, they were sold out. You could never find them. And, like, you were definitely cool if you had them. So she was wearing those boots. Louise was right when Popular Girl, the song starts. And that's, like, her first Popular Girl outfit. And one thing that we were noticing was that, you know, definitely the clothes kind of wear you in the 80s. I think mm-hmm. everyone knows that with the shoulder, you know, the big shoulders and everything. But it's kind of interesting because nowadays we're focused a bit more on, you know, dressing for your body and your aesthetic and, you know, it's okay that not everyone is wearing the same types of things. I mean, I'm also, you know, over 30, so maybe I just don't know what the teens are doing these days, but it does seem a little bit more inclusive in the sense that, like, not everyone's going to want to wear a mini skirt for any reason. And so you don't, you know, just because that might be the fashion, you don't have to. But what's kind of refreshing about the 80s is that no one really looks great. And that's not the point. You're just going to wear the thing that everyone likes. I mean, Robin Lively definitely looked gorgeous throughout the entire film. But, like, I don't know. I feel like if I were in the 80s as, like, a teenager, I could just put on a poofy skirt and some shoulder pads and I would be just as cool, right? That's what I'm telling myself.
What do you think the scrunchie count was on this film? I wish I had counted the scrunchies.
So many.
And the barrettes. The big barrettes. Oh,
the barrettes. Yeah, the big barrettes. And, yeah, the hair was interesting because, honestly, that was the big... The hair was the biggest thing. Like, you know, they did the classic makeover scene, which is, mm-hmm. which, you know, coincided with Popular Girl, which I love a makeover scene in a movie. Like, it's one of my favorite tropes and I love it. But for her, the biggest part of the makeover, honestly, they did a little more makeup. They gave her better fitting clothes, but mm-hmm. the biggest thing was the hair, honestly, was they curled the hair, you know, they put in some, you know, gel or whatever and kind of crimped it and, like, you know, cut it a little bit or whatever. That was the big thing was they just like made her hair like fantastic. And then all of a sudden Teen Witch is like, she's not the nerd, she's hot. And like really mm-hmm. all they changed was the hair.
I mean, think about Grease. If we learned anything from Grease, it's that a perm can change your life and your entire aesthetic. Truly power to the perm.
Well, and it's kind of funny because I think her hair is naturally curly. So then that kind of fits because her hair looked amazing in the second half. And I think it was because it was more natural and it fit her mm-hmm. better. And in the beginning, they were just straightening it. And it was kind of like a little bit frizzy on purpose because, again, she wasn't popular yet and all that. But yeah, her curls are just gorgeous.
I mean, it was magic. So
literally.
It's the power of magic. Thank you, Zelda Rubinstein. I feel like we have only even gotten the tip of the iceberg on this. I also want to just say shout out to the brother. I thought he was such an iconic bratty brother archetype for that time.
Him.
Like,
he was so
such
bad.
A, like, Bart Simpson, you know, like, kind of that little sidekicky kind of, you loved to hate him, and he was just so chewing the scenery in this film.
Yeah, his accent choices were interesting. Because sometimes he would like have like a very like a New York accent and then sometimes he would like go into some other things. But, he was the definite like petulant, bratty, like terrible little brother, even though some of the stuff, as Sarah was pointing out earlier, like made no sense where he's like, you know, just splattering like chocolate all over the walls and making a mishmash of other things. Like, what are you doing? Right. Like what is this even about? But no, he was, I hated him as a kid because he was like so annoying. And so like, just like, but like he played the part perfectly.
I loved how when he turned into a dog, she just like instinctively knew to wash him to wear off the magic. And she's like, and then the fortune teller is just like, oh yeah, water like makes this spell not last as long. And it's like, oh wow, very, very instinctual, Louise.
I love that Joshua Miller is the actor's name who plays the brother. And he now writes with his life partner, and they wrote the horror comedy, The Final Girls. I don't know if y'all have seen it, but it's an amazing film. It's from 2015. And it's just like this movie about, you know, the girl who is always the final girl in a horror film who survives. And anyways, no spoilers. Go check it out, though.
Any final parting thoughts on this truly iconic 90s film that played on repeat every day in my home?
He's so funky.
He'll never be that hip.
Top that. I will say the only final thought I have is the next time I'm going to go dancing with someone, I'm going to keep my torso perfectly still as I walk gracefully across the dance stage. And hopefully they dip me as low as Brad dipped Louise, because that was just love on screen.
Love it. Yeah. They mean, seriously. I mean, again, that is why, like, she recreated like that for Blake Lively's wedding, which I mean, the wedding already seemed ridiculous, you know, and it was the whole, like, they were at a plantation, the whole thing. And it was like, that was very controversial. But now that I know that, like, her sister, who was Teen Witch, like, recreated like that song and that kind of that moment, like, for her wedding.
I love it. So good. I wish I could have witnessed it.
Same. I wish there was video somewhere, because that would be really great.
Yep.
I would like to start a change.org petition to make the soundtrack for this film. I think it's a crime it doesn't exist, and I would listen to it. It'd probably be my most played playlist on Spotify if it was on there.
Totally. I will support that. I will support that. And I wonder, like, I mean, at this point, I think MGM owns the rights or whatever, but like, I wonder, like, I don't know, like, how much could it cost to get the masters and the other things? It probably belongs to the musician, the songwriter. Like, what do we have to do to get Teen Witch on, you know, on like a soundtrack, an actual soundtrack done?
I feel like this is such a missed opportunity too, because there's so many like movie musicals from yesteryear that now exist as just copies from audio for film. So if someone knows the logistics for that, please, for the love of everyone, do it.
Yeah. Also, like, think about the TikTok opportunities if this were an official song that, like, kids could, you know what I mean? Like,
maybe this is our calling.
I was just about to say, before we publish, I might have to just make a TikTok with some of these songs, because plug for our TikTok for our Salute Your Sports.
I would just like to say that we like boys.
We like boys. I started singing that to Ayla today, and then I changed it to We Like Toys. And it works. It works.
That's good. That's good.
I love the inclusivity of that.
Well, thank you so much, Christina, for coming on to cover Teen Witch with us. It was truly a pleasure to have you, and I'm so glad that this pod exists and that we could come and spend this hour together. Do you want to tell anyone where they can find you, any of our listeners, where they can find you on the internet, any projects you have coming up, anything like that?
Sure. Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm film_girl. Too long of an explanation to get into, but that those are my usernames. So please follow me. I make pretty good tweets, and I'm not as active of an Instagram poster as I should be. Although I do have like an agreement that if I can reach 10,000 followers, I will find a way to put on the Clippy costume that we have in Redmond, Chloe, and wear it in public. And that is my like bid. So if you want to see that sort of like tomfoolery, definitely follow me on Instagram. And then I do a tech and culture podcast called Rocket. It's at relay.fm/rocket. That's a lot of fun. I don't believe we've ever talked about Teen Witch. Although Simone de Rochefort and I would both definitely, she's one of my co-hosts, we would definitely be very into it. So if you want to check that out, relay.fm/rocket, and then I'm film_girl on Twitter and Instagram.
Perfect. Amazing. And we'll put links to those in our show notes.
And I'm sure we will have you back very soon, Christina, because this is just one of the many pop culture dives that has kept me occupied during the global panini. So thanks for being my 90s, fellow 90s lover constantly in the universe.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. I love the 90s, like the greatest decade ever. And so and I love the pod. So thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Sports is not endorsed by the companies featured in this episode or any of their subsidiaries. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only.
All names, pictures, audio, and video clips are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and/or copyright holders.
Mix and Master by Dr. G.
Our theme song is Keep Me Entertained by Maddie McGuire.
Salute Your Squirts is recorded in front of a live house plant
and in a shed
and is not produced in Nickelodeon Studios at Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida.